I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better. Today, I'm joined by Kayla Goulard, whose pronunciation I had to double check. Kayla has a ton of community management experience. She's worked on EverQuest 2, on the Forza Motorsport and the Forza Horizon franchise, of which I am a big fan. And she spent many years with the Xbox Live policy and enforcement team. Welcome to the show, Kayla.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm going to resist the urge to just talk the whole episode about Forza because I have played Forza Horizon so much. Number 3, number 4, number 5. Which ones were you involved in?
Let's see. When I came in, the big thing was Forza Horizon 3.
That's the Australian one?
Right, in Australia. Everybody loved that. I came into the development cycle for Forza Horizon 4, and that is what I had the most experience on, though during development of 4, I did have a lot of insight into 5, which was very hard to keep under wraps. You know, I knew the location, all of that.
That was the big thing. Everybody was guessing. Number 5 was Mexico. Yeah, I like that one a lot, but 4 was my favorite. I think I like the seasons thing they had where I think every week it was a new season, as in like seasons of the year. I really liked that effect. What did you do exactly on Forza Horizon? What was your role?
They brought me in next to or under their main community manager, Brian Ekberg, at the time. Great individual, great person to work for. I was a bit of a hybrid in that I did both community management, creating and running their contests for screenshots or videos, because Forza Horizon had such a profound photo mode and a great way to create content. The other big part of that was I was brought in to manage their enforcement side of things, right? Like the policy enforcement team, Turn 10 Studios is also, and Playground Games are also under Microsoft. So I was brought in to, for the most part, deal with looking at videos and seeing if like people were intentionally racing poorly, especially in the motorsport. I worked on some of the motorsport stuff as well. Find cheaters, you know, people either the cheating software side or hardware side, making inappropriate liveries and taking inappropriate pictures of cars, you know, all of that. And I kind of restructured that over time. So the way you would respond to the people asking why they were banned, the policies, you know, are you banned for 3 days, 7 days? What type of action determines what types of punishment, things like that, which is something I had a lot of experience in working with XBL Pet. So that was my main two jobs there.
How is that? I was thinking like, what could people do that was inappropriate in Forza, or at least in Horizon? And I didn't even think delivery, because there's not a lot of places you're actually creating content in that game as a player, but delivery, players find a way, don't they? They find a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They find a way to create anything. And most of it isn't, I'm trying to be offensive and I'm trying to offend people. It's like, haha, I know this is controversial. I'm going to put it on the side of a car. Like, you know, mm-hmm. the free candy vans was such a big, silly thing that people created all the time.
Sorry, the free?
People would often put free candy on the side of like van cars as like a haha
sort of
thing. It was so silly.
I see. In the Tour de France race they have in France every year, I watched this fantastic documentary about these two Dutch people whose job is to drive along the day's course. So they cycle about 200, 300 kilometers a day. And it goes through all these little French towns. I'm sure everybody knows about it, but for the sake of the story, I'm just going to go into detail. And every little village they go through, there's some smart aleck in that village who thinks it'll be great to go and spray paint genitals on the road or something like that, so that when the national or international cameras come, it'll be there and they'll go, ha ha. So there's two Dutch guys who have to get up early, drive the entire course, checking for this overnight graffiti or spray painting. And then they turn what they see on the road into like, they spray over it, they add to it to turn it into extraterrestrials or something like aliens or just little patterns. And, you know, it's just, why do people do this? I don't know, but we do, us humans do.
Funny. Yeah, the same with the Nürburgring, one of the biggest racetracks in the world. There's a big long stretch of it where it's common to put graffiti or spray paint things on it on that long stretch of straight. And same thing, they have to get rid of the worst of it before anything major happens on TV.
Such a job that you have to describe to people. What do you do? Anyway, we've gone in all the wrong order. I'm supposed to start by asking about you, how you got into becoming a community manager, your past there. Tell us about it. How did you get started?
This is actually something I've perfected for my interviews. My love of community comes from the game EverQuest, created by Sony Online Entertainment. Came out in 1999. My dad brought it home one day and was like, oh, I found this new game. We're going to play. And I was kind of excited about it. He installs it. And there goes the rest of my childhood. I played EverQuest and EverQuest 2 from 1999 to 2017 abouts. Less so in the 2010s, you know, starting my career and everything. But I have some really specific and great memories from the community in EverQuest, right? There wasn't a lot of social media. There wasn't really external communication programs, despite like Ventrilo maybe later. So all of that community interaction, and it happened in the game. There was no voice chat, right? You're doing it all through text. And I had a specific moment when I was like about 11, where I'm just starting and looking for how to do things. Somebody comes up and helps me. Their name was Winterwhite. They then proceeded to help me get armor, learn how to summon pets, all of the little basic things you do in the game. A couple of years later, I went to my first ever Sony, or what was it called at the time? It wasn't EverQuest Live. It was something similar. It was a fan-made event in Las Vegas, their first one. And I met that person, Winterwhite, there. And she had no idea. I was just like this 13-year-old little human that was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And it was, I didn't cry about it at the time. But like years later, I'm thinking about that. And I'm like, that EverQuest is the reason that I got into community management, because I had such positive experiences that I was like, this is something that needs to be fostered. And not in those exact words, right? I wasn't, you know, 13-year-old me. It wasn't like, I need to foster these environments. But those little moments and all of the community togetherness I experienced, negative and positive, is kind of what led me to in here. So when I turned 18, I was like, I need to volunteer to be a community, not community manager, like a community volunteer in EverQuest 2, where you could run, you could help answer tickets, you could run small quests in zones for players, which was a lot of fun. As soon as I turned 24, I beat the door down at Nintendo, got myself a job as a game tester in Seattle, and the rest, here I am.
Well, that's amazing. And then you actually got to work on EverQuest 2.
Yeah, and not in like, you know, a paid sense, but I was like, they have this volunteer program. This is what I want to do.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what was the name of the person who helped you? Winterwhite.
Winterwhite, that was their character name in game.
Okay, and she helped you in game or in forums? What was the
in game? It was all in game. I was sitting outside of one of the cities. They came up and asked if I needed any help, and I was like, I don't know where to find this for my spells. And then, you know, they got me armor, just all the starting helpful things.
She wasn't employed by Nintendo or the EverQuest team. She just happened to be a player who liked helping.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really nice, huh? And then eventually you end up working for the Xbox team with Forza and so on. So what's it like? What's it like with, we already talked a little bit about, you know, people just like to see what they can do, but to bend the rules. But what's it like telling somebody to bend? How do they respond?
So the way we did it, and this was arguably to keep a lot of people safe, especially on the team, right? You know, when people are banned, they're mad. Mm-hmm. That just makes sense, right? Punitive action. There's a weird sense of justice. You know, when you're just playing games out in the wild as a person, and you see like somebody being really mean, somebody being aggressive towards other people, or being unfair in a game, and you're just like, ah, why would I do this if I can just cheat? It's frustrating. When you're on the other side of that, you can do something about it. And at least for me, it made me want to be the most accurate I could, right? It wasn't like, oh, I have power now. It was like, I have a responsibility. And so, you know, when you take those actions, it was fulfilling in a way. And then we had a system where you could write in and you could be like, hey, why am I banned? Or whatever. People said all kinds of things, from, you know, knowing what they did and being like, I'm sorry, or threatening us.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
When they write in, so there was some type of email address or a public forum where they could write to? How would they contact you?
Yeah, so when you it might be a little bit different now, but when you logged into your Xbox Live account again, you would have a notification that says you've been suspended for this many days for this reason. And we had a bunch of subset reasons of harassment, cheating, a bunch of different categories. And then there was an option to, I believe, from the player side, it was you were able to inquire about why you were banned from the UI itself.
Mm-hmm.
And on our end, that would come into a queue, where we could then answer those people with a subset of, we had a bunch of different pre-built out responses, but almost nobody used those exclusively. We used those and then added on to them.
Right. I think that's the best way. It helps you get your thoughts together, but then you need to customize it.
Yeah. And sometimes people came in really angry or upset or like I said, threatening. And sometimes you just gave them that one response because, you know, this isn't worth getting worked up over. And we're not providing any information that's going to help them.
Perfect.
You know? Yeah. And those pre-built out responses were created by our communications manager, right? And as a team, we were able to make suggestions or changes or whatever. One of the big things that we always said on that team was context is king.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is. Context is such a huge part of that job and the way you're responding to people. Because the whole point is not to take punitive action.
Right.
Or punish, it's to change behavior.
Okay. I like that, because to some degree you're expected to be a judge and jury without any like formal legal training. And I like that it's, we're not really out there to punish. We just want to make the environment safe and help people change their behavior. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it must have been hard though in some of the cases. I just can imagine what some small subset of players must have been like.
Sure. I mean, XBL Pep, and I think they've changed their name now to Xbox Safety, I think, maybe. Keep in mind, this was 2014 to 2017.
Okay.
During that time, it wasn't just like, hey, you're cheating or you're harassing other people because you could report anything to us, or you have a bad gamer tag. There are other parts of that team that handled things like NCMEC, so keeping children safe on the internet, working with police to find potentially really bad actors,
Tracking
down fraud rings or really built out groups of people that were cheating, but they were doing it as a business, right? So they were causing more harm to the service than others.
They're doing it as a service. But, can you explain what that means?
Some people that learned how to cheat, or for example, you're playing Call of Duty Black Ops. Somebody is inviting people to a specific lobby after they pay them $10 to get all the guns in the weapon or all the guns in the game just instantly, or the highest rank. And sometimes those people are making thousands and thousands of dollars a day, right? So there's different teams for different specialized things. So it wasn't just, you know, you're banned for cheating or harassing somebody, which are all important as well. But this is a live service with any type of person on there.
And any country too, right? They're not just, you're based in the US, but these people could be in other countries with different cultural norms and to the
and approaches. Different ways that they talk, different things that are okay to them, but, you know, seeing them in a vacuum can be different. That's why context is so important, right?
So inside this team, I guess you all had avatars, or it was completely anonymous. Like they were just writing to the unit, to the team, and being answered by the team, or they were getting answered by individuals that they could see, like an avatar or a.
Everything was anonymous, right? We weren't barred from telling people where we worked. It was highly, you know, people were like, you really shouldn't do that. And for good reason, right? And I have some more on that. But we were all anonymous when you were replied to. I believe it came to you as XBL pet like Theta or XBL pet Alpha or different, you know, different names like that. So nobody ever knew who we were. However, the higher up you are on that team, you know, like FTEs, full-time employees, things like that, are often more public facing because they had to be. And a lot of people on that team got threatened.
Wow.
Twice during my time there, we had bomb threats to the building. So we had to go into lockdown. Do you know what swatting is?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I've heard about this.
A couple of people on the team
got swatted. This is when somebody calls the 911 and says, hey, there's like somebody armed at this address. So they send the SWAT team.
Yeah.
It's actually nobody there. It's just doing that. Oh, really? Okay. And this happened to a couple of people on the team. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
this is like,
those people tipped.
This is the most intense side of community management I've ever heard of. This is.
It's the part you don't think about. And keep in mind that this was my career introduction to community management. I didn't come in on the side where you're streaming for people, you're doing all the more quote unquote fun stuff, creating content, you're being yelled at, you're being threatened, you're telling people why they did something. You're seeing awful, awful things on a daily basis. You know, we monitored videos too. Like if it had a person in it, it came to us before it went to the live service. And we just had to click next in that queue and be like,
I don't even want to ask. Not on air anyway. If we were talking in private, I would want to hear all these stories. But hey, listeners, we are trying to respect, what would you say? Respect the rights of the people who have worked on that team. Like
exactly. And a lot of people saw horrible things, and we didn't have the greatest access to mental health care, especially at that time, you know, in 2014, right? We're all young 20-somethings. It just suffice it to say, think about why you're not, like, if you're scrolling TikTok or Instagram or something, we like to get mad at, like, sometimes you'll see content and you're like, why are they not taking care of this? Think about how every time you scroll, you know, you're watching thousands of videos over the course of a week, you're not seeing horrible stuff every other video because of how sophisticated systems have got to keep that stuff away from you, or people that are there to review that sort of content before it ever reaches you.
Hey, listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com. So how did you and the team manage to stay on the level without having a breakdown or without like getting this fortress mentality? What was the approach?
Something the team kind of did was we were all We're all kind of friends. We're also kind of people in life that have seen a lot of stuff and dealt with a lot on a personal level, that doing this, we're a little bit more resilient to it, right, at the time. You know, you see something bad and you're like, yikes. Or you have a little bit of gallows humor. We also had a lot of meetings on the team that were created by the leads to discuss what we see, to realign where we're taking action, to talk about the stuff that we've seen. And we weren't like cut off from access to healthcare and stuff like that. Like, we were able to find mental health resources. I would have liked it to have been a little better structured.
And maybe it would be today in 2025.
I have no idea what that team looks like now and how it functions. This is all from, you know, I left that team ago. In 2017.
Let's not just dwell on this darker side of community management in the whole interview. So let's talk about something more positive. Tell me, how do you learn to do community management better?
Let's see. Like, my own arguably biased answer is experience. And that's because, the way I got into it is by having these incredible experiences in gaming communities. I've been a gamer since playing Quake 1 when I was like 8 on the PC. I used a lot of God mode just to kill things. I was, I was like, I'm just here to have fun. And so my answer for that is just getting experience. The caveat there is, all of the experience you're going to get as a community manager, or could get for being a community manager, is not exclusive to stuff you learn on the job. I broke into the industry using all of the experience that I got as a volunteer, knowing what I know about the gaming community by being embedded in it. And then I never got the opportunity to go to college for anything. I don't have a degree in communications. And that's just been the way I function was always just like being scrappy, get in my teeth. If there's something new I need to do that I haven't done before, I'm Googling, or I'm messaging people. I'm being annoying, in a sense.
Positively annoying, not negatively annoying, I hope.
Yeah. I'm putting aside my ego, and I'm trying to find information to best do the thing that I want to do. And that all of this was just experience. I think as a community manager and in a job like this, you have a good opportunity and are lucky enough to find information online. You get information from people in your network. Networking is a huge one, right? If you just ask questions, people really want to help you because people like to tell you the stuff that they know for whatever reason. They're excited to tell you who they are, what they know, how to do something better for yourself because it comes from them. And again, community management isn't just in gaming, right? There's community managers for everything. And I think being human is the best experience. That sounds like such a line. So being human is the best experience for community management. These days, there's a lot of free resources for learning new things. You know, even things like LinkedIn Premium, I think, has a way to connect with other people in your industry to take their small classes or get information from them. Excuse me. So yeah, it's all experience, and it's not just experience on the job, though coming from the way that I had to do it, you do have to learn to turn your "I play video games" into business words, into industry words.
One of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast, the first season and now the second season, in case I didn't say it on air, you're the first guest on season two, so thank you for helping me start season two. One of the reasons why I'm doing this is because, well, our product, usually it's community managers who bring it into an organization, and I wanted to find out what resources there were for community managers to see if what I could tap into and help with, and it just turned out to be really hard to find definitive resources online. A lot of it seems to be exactly as you described. It's like networking, who you know, learning on the job. So this is I find interesting, because if I look for other sides of the video games industry, there's no end of resources on the internet. I'm kind of curious why it's not there for community managers when such an important role. Any theories?
I have a couple theories, and these are all probably stemming from my personal hurts as both somebody female presenting and in a community role in the gaming industry. There is a big controversy, at least from what I see, of whether or not community managers and community people are considered developers. I am of the mind that they are, because they're literally developing communities. But at the same time, as a community manager, you have to learn to speak developer speak so that you can translate that information back and forth. But my theory is that it's a very not thankless, right? Because you are player facing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a very underrated role when it comes to gaming specifically. You take all the information back and forth. You are the face of a company or a game or whatever. But all of the stuff that's happening, you know, changes in a game, making the changes players want, that all comes from developers. And these days, developers are becoming more player-facing. They're doing the videos. They're talking. They're doing streams and all that stuff, which is great. But I think people focus on where, like, the tactile action is coming from, where the coding is happening, and that's okay. No, I think it's just because it's more ambiguous what community management is and what we do.
It's very ambiguous. Yeah, this is a real problem.
Yeah. And it's different for every role, right? You could be doing streaming mainly for one role, like I did at Turn 10. Or you could be just writing publications or newsletters in a different role. So,
or just on Reddit answering all the player or the player complaints.
Yeah.
Moving on, do you have any tips for people wanting to become a community manager?
This is harder these days, especially with how rocky the gaming industry is now. But if it's specifically in gaming, I assume you're a gamer. And if you're a gamer, you already have so much experience in being a community manager in gaming that is unteachable. You cannot teach it in a college class. You cannot read a document and learn it. It's not a step-by-step process. So think about the way you communicate already with people in a game. You're already doing a lot of the work. You already know what they're saying. You know what they're... You have a gut feeling of what's prominent and what's not prominent in the gaming community that you're in. What I did when I started at Turn 10, one of the first tasks I ever got from the community manager I was working for was, hey, go through all of our reviews on like Amazon or Steam, what have you, and pick out the top issues that you see. I don't care what they are. It could be that the disc is broken or something unrelated to us, but he wanted me to start training my gut and then practicing turning that gut feeling into information that can be read by a developer or a coder or have you, and make it so that they feel like they can take action on it. As far as practical things of getting your foot in the door, a lot of the times starting as a tester is good experience, or being a Discord mod for a community that you really like. All of those things are work and often unpaid work, but you have the experience over somebody who isn't in those communities or hasn't had or has just done a communications degree. And don't get me wrong, communications degrees are great, and it's something that I want to get one day. But look at the people around you, see what they're doing, become a tester. There are a million jobs in the gaming industry, like quality analyst, that are underthanked. But when you have that experience, it goes a long way.
Great, great answer. The time has gone past quickly. I think I spent way too much time talking with you about Forza and the Microsoft head team, the policy and enforcement team, or the Xbox Live team. But there is one very important question I still have to ask. So you said that you played EverQuest and EverQuest 2 up until 2017. I noted that in my head, and it got me wondering, what game are you playing now? What fills that need that the EverQuest? Well, why did you stop with EverQuest 2? Did it get discontinued? Did they turn off the servers?
No, in fact, EverQuest 1 is still going strong to this day. They have a new expansion set for the spring, I believe.
Okay, so question, in case my question was unclear, because I think I went off on a tangent, what game is it that you play these days, or what games?
Man, the past 2 weeks have been gameless as I look for a new role in the community. I think something I've really enjoyed, which is controversial, has been Star Wars Outlaws. I've been both playing some and watching people play it, and it had a rocky launch, but story's good. You get immersed in it. The game that has a community that I've been really enjoying is Deep Rock Galactic, right?
There's not everybody's impressed with their community.
They've done such a good job playing with people in that game, even when there's no text communication. You just feel each other, and that's been so enjoyable. I have so much fun with that.
Well, have you been playing that or watching?
So Deep Rock Galactic, I've been playing a lot of I keep wanting to say Star Wars Galaxies. That game doesn't exist anymore. Outlaws has been really fun to watch. It's like watching a story unfold. Yeah.
Okay. And why did you stop playing EverQuest 2?
Around 2017, 2018 is really when my career took off with Forza. Uh-huh. I don't really have the time anymore. And at that point, I was really high-end rating, right? We were first or second guild worldwide in terms of taking down content. And I just couldn't sink the 5 hours a night into rating anymore, right? I had to jump into my career.
That is such a common story, that the people who work the hardest in the games industry don't have time to play the games that brought them into the industry.
Right.
You know, I guess that's life. Look, that's all we have time for today, Kayla. So thank you again for being on the show and for helping kick off season 2.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I want to say one last thing for anybody looking to get into community management, and that is everybody's going to want data points, right? They're going to say, what are these data points? Where do we go from here? But nobody wants to talk to people. People are your most important data point, and it's your job to turn those people into data points while still remembering that they're people.
Nice. I like that. That's a great way to finish off. Okay. Bye, Kayla.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of The Community Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.